Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to the Raw Review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by the Dudley Boys of What Culture, Michael Hamflett and Michael Sidgwick, here to review everything that happened on last night's episode of Monday Night Raw. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we not only review Raw, but also SmackDown, NXT, Dubai, AEW Dynamite, AEW Rampage, pay-per-views, premium live events. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on Wrestle Culture. As I said, though, joined by Hamflett and Sidgwick to review Monday Night Raw and an episode that was kind of neither here nor there, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, really boring. I thought there was two things on the show that were worthy of objective praise and one that could be subjectively enjoyed, if that's your sort of thing. That's three things in 3 hours. That's 1 hour. That's not a strong enough hit rate. It's just not. I know that we have all figured out, feels like we've unlocked the secret to reviewing and possibly even enjoying Monday Night Raw of late. So how dare they try and make a largely drab wrestling show in this wacky fun time that we ourselves have curated in 2022. Too drab. Way too drab. Like, the lack of commercials was once seen as a bit of a treat when there's a good wrestling show to be had. Now, like, you know, the first quarter hour of AEW, you're keen to see what goes in that period where there's going to be no interruption whatsoever. It's torture. It's absolute. Give me a cereal advert or something. It's absolute torture to see any of this show without some sort of interruption, without WWE being forced to break. So I never thought I'd campaign for the days where Raw actually rolled on, but I desperately needed everybody in the show to take a breath in that first hour, especially.
It was. I assumed, Sidge, when they revealed the dates of premium live events, that with a three-week gap between the Chamber and the Royal Rumble, that they wouldn't need or even be able to have a wheel-spinning episode. And yet, that's exactly what we got this week.
It's just incredibly inconsequential, like, even by their standards.
You could sort of tell when we were previewing it yesterday, couldn't you?
There was, like, bollocks klaxon was going off in my head throughout this entire show of no one can emerge from this match with any kind of credit. No one can emerge from this match who is not going to get buried when they shouldn't be. Like, the amount of people who are in featured roles at Elimination Chamber or who have goddamn titles around their waist who had to lose or had to get screwed out of matches. It's just a joke. Like, it was not as bad as SmackDown. Like, did you watch it?
Of course, I didn't have to talk about it. I took a week off. I needed it.
There was a match, right, where it was Ricochet versus Ridge Holland. Ricochet won. Then they just did an impromptu tag match with Cesaro and Sheamus involved. Mm. And then Ricochet took the fall. They literally spent, 20 minutes combined with match time, entrances, commercials, 20 minutes to achieve literally nothing. I legitimately just said, I'm not talking about it. They've done two things that cancel each other out that advanced literally nothing. Parody of WWE booking, I'm not doing it at all. And there was more of that kind of stuff on this show, just beating people that you don't want to beat, but who cares?
We might not be aware about it, and that's absolutely fine, but do they get a lot less viewers on Sci-Fi? Have they sort of taken their foot off
the gas? Oh, Christ, this is why they do it. Like, they don't want to. There's no pride in most WWE shows, but that's especially true when they get shunted, like when they get preempted, and this was just a show where it's like, right, we can't really do anything because not as many people are watching.
Well, why? So why not just do stuff anyway?
Because they hate you, mate. They hate you.
Oh, yeah, granted, yeah.
It's I get it, but I don't. Like, especially now in the TV rights fee era, where any given week, regardless of where it's shunted, you know, they would probably argue that these almost don't count. You know, it's like the same complaints we had for the Saturday Dynamites last year, where you can feel the low energy because of the move or because it's like, well, this doesn't really count, back to where we're. I don't know why wrestling companies do it, because there's still opportunity to be found in this. You might have like a relatively small number of people that have never watched the show before that might be given reason to stick around. There might be the idea that, oh, well, because we're moving networks, we can go off piste a little bit and we can do things a little bit differently. And they can actually like turn a negative into a positive. But it doesn't seem the way anymore. In the era of these inflated rights fees, it seems like companies can just see this as a bit of a free hit until they're supposed to get back to the proper business of it. And I wish they wouldn't, because I seem to recall like the day I'm only going back to like the late 90s Attitude Era. Like Vince McMahon hated being shunted by the Westminster Dog Show. Absolutely hated it. But those Saturday Raw specials were sometimes a lot of fun because everything was a bit different. You know, we were well into the point where you had the same set or the same stage or the same layout. We were into the you know, the big promo opens the show, the unannounced main event, all that kind of thing. And yet, just moving nights forced them to just try a little bit of something different. And it does feel like the fact that pay-per-views being sold or big events being sold or whatever, or nothing being sold in some cases, has stripped that motivation away, because it's all about what you do for the network that pays you on the reg, USA, Fox, TNT, whatever. I don't like it. We're still viewers on a weekly basis that should be able to receive a show the same way just because it's changed channels.
Mm, weird. Anyway, let's dive straight into it. We open with the Quiz Bowl, the final round of the Alpha Academy Academic Challenge. If RK-Bro win, they get a title shot against the Alpha Academy. The Quiz Bowl was hosted by Kevin Patrick. introduced Riddle and Randy. Challengers, then introduced American Alpha, and we got a recap of what happened at the Spelling Bee and the scooter race, and then Chad Gable, who was just, once again, on brilliant form, interrupts Kevin Patrick and explains the rules. First team to 5 points win. I've not written down all of the questions. Apologies.
That's fine.
There was questions about US presidents, biology, cartoons, etc. There was a bit where Orton got a question wrong about one of the Baldwins, I believe, that allowed the Alpha Academy to seemingly take an unassailable lead. And then Gable got a question about films and movies, asking what the most, I think, adapted Shakespeare play was. I noticed one of them to say Hamlet, because it's got a ham in it. But he said Romeo and Juliet. He got it wrong. That allowed Riddle to correctly guess, pull it back to 4-3. Orton got a question about sports, and specifically the Denver Broncos, which was lucky considering where they were. And it was a John Elway answer. I can't remember what it was. Maybe
it's like Shearer to the Denver people.
Yeah, exactly. Gable's not happy. Crowd chants, he sucked. It's 4-4. Next goal winner. Oh. And the final question goes to the Alpha Academy first. It's about metric conversions, of course. How many grams? How many grams are in an ounce? Gable gets it wrong. Riddle's about to take this because, you know, he knows about these things. And then Orton cuts across him and says, "You're not the only one who bakes, bro." Gets it right. 28 grams in an ounce, of course, as we all know. RK-Bro win the Quiz Bowl. They've got a tag team title match. And then Gable is furious and sells for the buzzer, basically.
Right. This was... like, the crowd are massively into it. I love watching Chad Gable succeed. There was legitimately, again, more tension in the use of, like, numbers and maths and, like, a traceable sort of way of getting behind your baby face.
You're calling this the G1?
It's the G1 of sports entertainment. Legitimately, if you put some kind of stakes in the segment, in the drama...
Otis will eat him.
People will get...
Sorry, you did that whilst you were drinking.
People will get into it. It's exactly the same principle as the G1. Maths, permutations, ramifications. Which matches are going to have like untold significance that you didn't expect at the start of the tournament. It's similar to what AEW should really be doing more with their ranking system. Mm. Time limit draws, like the idea of an elusive thing slipping away from you. Like, they nail drama in the context of this stupid bollocks, subjectively halfway entertaining, if you've got a tolerance for WWE comedy, Quiz Bowl, than their actual pro wrestling emulations. It's absolutely ridiculous. I, however, I couldn't tell what side I was on for the big internal debate I had. Have you ever seen the It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia episode when they go on Family Feud, or like their version of Family Feud.
Oh,
Fortune.
No, I've not seen this one.
It's, they ripped off the gag. Dennis Reynolds does the same thing that Chad Gable did, where he goes on, he thinks he's the cleverest, most intellectual guy in the gang, and he thinks he's going to win all the money, and he fails. And he starts to, he really hates the buzzer, and the buzzer, the more it goes off, like his delusional facade, like it breaks into it. They ripped off that gag. I couldn't tell her, I was like, I love you even more, Chad Gable, for pitching this and having a great taste in sitcoms. Or if I just thought, this is just outright plagiarism. Outright plagiarism, and it's not as funny as when It's Always Sunny did it.
Yeah, the thing is, like, Chad Gable succeeding, I think that's what you put it. Like, Chad Gable, what we mean is he's having a good time at work. It's not like the characters, obviously, on the wrong end of things, but
quiz bowl to determine number one contenders. It's a farce.
Yeah.
And it was undone at the end.
Well, this is what I was saying when I thought something was subjectively enjoyable. This wasn't for me, only because they were a little bit too ambitious with it. I heard First to Five. Like, oh, come on.
It went on a while, like.
You've made a board, and that's fine. It's fun almost. It's more fun if you put some, like, ostentatious category titles on the board and then don't get to them. But the idea that you might have done is almost funny, the stuff you've left behind.
I did like...
Horticulture.
Yeah. Like,
I did like US President's Biology cartoons.
There was a great bit. I really appreciated Chad Gable when they were like, when he was lording it up over getting the Stephen Baldwin question. He was like, you should have read a book.
Every time he says, don't boo education, it makes me laugh. I don't know why.
The guy's printed off like 3 t-shirts in the past 3 weeks, and that's to be admired.
He's done well with it. You have to go a little bit with the crowd who come to Monday Night Raw, as we talked about, not for wrestling, based on the silence that greets the matches, but for stuff like this,
get,
you know,
to the
like
quiz, they should just run a quiz show.
Yeah,
get Monday to the Night quiz.
Get to the quiz.
Monday Night Pub Quiz. That's what it is. Basically, that's what they should do.
They got their Randy Orton, who is apparently the top babyface in all of pro wrestling. Don't know how it's happened. Only took 20
come
years.
Come in, do some quiz questions. RKO, leave.
Yeah, like that. This went on way too long for me to honestly say I was still enjoying it, still laughing, it's still popping, whatever. But the live crowd had a good time, and that kind of came through. Mm. And none of these characters, and this is so crucial when we're going to talk about so many that are on the show, none of these characters feel ancient, stale, and lost. None of them.
No.
Like, regardless of like how this is going to end or where the feuds are going to go and whatever, right now, when it comes to sort of previewing Raw, or when it comes to thinking about who's in programs that you want to watch, these four are those people. Mm. And that's like, that's always the exception rather than rule in WWE. It's the opposite to AEW's thing. Typically, you're looking at about 80% of the roster, you can think of the things they're up to. It's about 20 in WWE. And this, and like, this accounted for about like 90% of the 20%.
Mm. Anyway, following this, the Street Profits came out, rubbed it all in, talked about the Mile High City, and got themselves into a fight with the Alpha Academy. Gable said they're going to get their asses kicked, and Otis laid out Montez Ford from behind. Then we got the match. It almost looked like Street Profits were going to get the victory. Angelo Dawkins gave Gable a silencer, but in came Otis to break up the cover. Montez Ford did one of his bonkers dives yet again. He knocked Otis out of the ring and flipped out to take him out, but that left Gable and Dawkins. Really like Angelo Dawkins. I often say he's underappreciated. Did some great stuff here, some good counters, and Gable put him in the ankle lock, and then he tried to get out of it, countered that, and Gable rolled him up to pin him and give Alpha Academy the victory. Good, they didn't pin their tag team champions.
That was the only thought that was running through my head throughout all of this. They are going to pin the champions because that's what they do. Because, like, look at the booking. The babyfaces have come out kind of pointlessly and issued a challenge, and they look like such dickheads for losing in 5 minutes. Like, such, like, deluded, weird dickheads for just thinking they could just go and beat them. It did them no favours whatsoever, the Street Profits, who I do like. Again, I have to echo your comments about Angelo Dawkins, like him and Chad Gable, like working a realistic big man versus little man match. Chad Gable, like dissecting him and like maneuvering around him to try and deliver these power moves was really, really impressive. But the Street Profits look like total chumps, like total dickhead chumps for issuing the challenge, not being able to back it up like every babyface should do, like terrible booking in a way that no one really cares about anymore, but it was still annoying. And before they worked me into the match, and Gable and Dawkins particularly did, and that was all of 5 minutes, but it was quite nice while it lasted, I just resented the idea of wrestling happening on Raw after they do a quiz bowl. It's like, it's not what you do. Like, just do something else.
That's the cause of and solution to all of WWE's problems, isn't it? Everything Cedric has just said there is salient. None of it about the Street Profits will matter in 7 days. Like, they will come out next week for their match against whoever, the Dirty Dogs or something, and we'll be like, oh, they've got a big win. Maybe they're going to be, like, number one contender soon. They've just lost the champions, but it now matters, does it?
I've no idea what Bobby Lashley is now. Granted, it probably didn't help matters, even if they did want him to make a heel, because it was a hero's return, hometown return. MVP does the big Paul Heyman, basically, introduction for Bobby Lashley. He gets a great reaction from Denver, Colorado. And MVP runs down recent events. Crowd were not happy about the insinuation that Lashley only beat Lesnar because of Roman Reigns. He said to MVP that it should have been declared Bobby Lashley Day after his win, but instead, last week they found out he was going to have to defend his title inside Elimination Chamber. He said, look, Lesnar does deserve credit for winning the Royal Rumble and deserve to face Roman Reigns at WrestleMania, but it's pure fantasy that they think he's going to take the title, Lashley's title, that is, at the Chamber, and make it title for title. Another time they've said that. Can talk about that in a second. Look, MVP wasn't there to discredit the other chamber competitors. He did very good. This is the nicest possible compliment I can give him. Very good Paul Heyman impression here, because he put everyone over in the match. AJ Styles, Seth Rollins, two of the best that have ever done it. Riddle and Austin Theory, basically the future of WWE. But none of them compared to Lashley. He's the baddest monster of them all. And Lashley got on the mic to a huge reception. He wasn't happy about Brock Lesnar. He says, talked about how infrequently he defended the title. When was the last time he even wrestled on Monday Night Raw?
Who is he? Like a squared circle user?
He looked forward to pinning Lesnar once again, and when Lesnar wakes up in the hospital, he could look forward to wrestling Reigns whilst Lashley went on to main event WrestleMania. For saying now effectively here, this got a great reaction, Hamflet.
It did, yeah. This was, I think, their attempt, and it was I'm going to be generous and call this a noble failure, but this was their attempt to capture the same energy that MJF got in, I was going to say New Jersey, but that's not where
it's from. Long Island.
Long Island, thank you. Where somebody is a heel, but getting to be a babyface for the night. The two problems with that are they're just not elegant enough to pull it off in content and delivery. And also, they're so unclear at this point with whether Bobby Lashley is a babyface or a heel, that next week he could be cheered in a different town. With this material, basically, without, you lift all the Denver stuff out and he delivers this material and he might get pops there as well. So it's, I don't actually mind them leaning in on hometowns. We recently had a couple of hometown wins on Raw, didn't we? Was it?
Yes, last week, Angelo Dawkins. Yeah, in his hometown.
I was going to say it was only last week. So maybe there's actually a long overdue policy change on how to treat wrestlers in the hometowns, and they can throw out their usual character booking. But they throw it out all the time. So again, it's tricky when a company is so inconsistent to look for consistencies. I will say, because it just, Lashley's losing, which is another issue. Like, he's losing. They've had both Heyman and MVP speak this champion versus champion. If you didn't already think it was happening because of the cool allusions to your Hogan Warriors, to your Becky Two Belts, to these other historic WrestleMania main events, you absolutely must know it's now in the plans, because WWE are telling you it's in the plans, which is really not ideal that you're then sending Bobby Lashley out to cut these promos when he's not going to back up his words, and then he's going to be left completely marooned right before WrestleMania.
I was going to say, do you think they even know if that's the case? Or regardless of whether or not that's the case, in fact, do you think they even know who Bobby Lashley's facing in April?
Oh, I've got no idea. All I know is this segment was just, it was completely lost on me. I didn't believe a goddamn word either of them were saying. The way in which the Rumble unfolded, they tried to, like, address the elephant in the room, what everyone's thinking about how unconvincing it was. And Bobby's still a star and all this. I didn't believe a goddamn thing they were saying. I think they've booked themselves into a corner. I've got no real interest in what happens on Monday Night Raw itself. Like, when this, in fact, goes down. It's one of those, it's like, it's the Raw problem, but in Saudi Arabia, in a fun gimmick match, they've booked themselves into a corner. No matter what the outcome is, it's going to damage somebody else, and it's just a terrible affront to what the core purpose of what professional wrestling should be.
We continue with another segment with Alexa Bliss. She's holding on.
Someone always looks bad.
Yeah.
It's not easy to not do that. It's easy to not do that.
She's holding the replica Lily that he's very insistent he got from WWE shop. They didn't take our advice and fill the room with Lilies.
They've got a warehouse still, a flog of these or something. Is that why they're...
I want you to know, Alexa, this is from WWE shop. And right now, if you put it in code Lily, you get 20% discount. Yeah. Bliss happy to be clinging on to Lily, and then he said, oh, this is a, I don't know, loss exercise or something. Hand her over. And Alexa Bliss, Oscar-worthy acting, crying, I thought. Sage, what do you reckon, mate?
Well, it's not the medium for an Oscar, is there? It's not the medium. It would be an Emmy.
Fair point. Well, Emmy-worthy, then. No one ever says that. Should have won an Emmy. It's always Oscar, isn't it, in the comments about
Alexa's acting. Like Big Show cried. No one said he should win an Oscar. Because he hasn't got tits.
Did you ever see Big Show?
At certain stages of his career, he did. But he got himself in shape and it was too late by the end.
I watched Big Show's show. I wouldn't give him an Emmy either, to be honest.
Did you watch that?
My kids saw it on their Netflix Kids and stuck it on. I was like, is this the gateway to get them into wrestling? And it turns out it wasn't even the gateway to get them into television because it was just hideous all the way around.
I caught Anne-Louise watching it and went, what are you doing here?
Caught her.
She soon turned it off. I think she recognised what it... It's not a classic, is it? It's not a classic of the genre.
We get that question sometimes, isn't it? Like, what's the one like wrestling thing you wouldn't want to be caught watching in front of a non-fan? Like, your wife gets caught watching the Big Show show. That's your, like, HLA or something. Turn that shit off.
Danhausen, probably.
One of your kids says, very nice, very evil. Where did you hear that? Because it's not from your dad.
Anything you want to say? This is another segment we're going to come to later on.
Nah.
Let's cover it there.
Fair enough. Then we got a surreal match. Here's me sat here thinking that Kevin Owens is the number one contender because he pinned the United States champion. But anyway, it was a championship contender match. United States champion Damian Priest, who they don't like anymore, apparently, versus AJ Styles. An enjoyable match. Like, these two work really well together, I thought. Nice counters early on. At one point, Styles went for a Styles clash, but Damian Priest fought out of it, so instead he just lifted him up brilliantly. I don't know why it baffled me. I've seen AJ Styles wrestle for years, and just him lifting Damian Priest up, I was like, bloody hell.
Yeah.
It had gone up anyway for a fireman's carry backbreaker. That got a two count. I do love this is a spot, and I don't know why, in any wrestling match, Styles, they twat each other a bit. Styles hits a Pele kick, and Priest gets basically briefly knocked out and falls on top of Styles to almost get the pinfall. What? That's my little kink, I think, in wrestling. I love that. Anyway, Priest knocked Styles off the top rope because he was going for a phenomenal forearm, but as Priest ran off the opposing ropes, he came back to getting nailed by AJ Styles in his brilliant, phenomenal forearm, gets the pinfall win. He's got a title shot for the United States Championship next week, and Priest looked angry after the match, so he's presumably turning heel at some point.
Yeah, probably. Like, this was a pretty good match. Styles is in the mood at the moment.
I
don't know what it is, but he's it probably goes back before, like, last week where we were all just cooing over the Rey Mysterio match, but he was one of the few memorable components of one of the worst Royal Rumbles ever, probably.
I didn't like winning phenomenal forearmed Omos's leg.
Yeah, just needed that one little bit of momentum. That's what I had. And he was doing bits with Austin Theory beforehand that were, again, helping him along. So just generally, he's having a good run. He's treating himself to some good single stuff, having done some of the really heavy lifting with Omos last year. And I thought Damian Priest needed a match like this and then couldn't have needed the result any less. It is so apparent at this point how much the audience have... They're not so much as cool on him as they have given up. We said this about... I think, like... Me and Sidgwick were probably good like barometers for where the audience were. I was kind of clinging on to the Priest thing just because he's all right. But the main thing was is that they'd showed commitment towards him. So I was like, just because he's not doing much for me week on week, the fact that they're looking after him.
Undefeated streak.
Feels like something worth getting behind. Whereas Sidgwick was very much more, well, not only am I not feeling anything, but I don't trust them. So I'm just not going to attach that emotion.
Wise.
Always wise. The audience were both of those things. They were like, all right, yeah, we'll go. It's a bit silly, this Damian Priest thing, but he's keeping winning. And they're mentioning the undefeated streak now. We'll keep going with it. The second that's been ripped away, they've gone, I didn't care all along, and now I don't need to. And that is so apparent in the reactions he's getting and the more acting he's going to be asked to do as part of this, like, horrendous gimmick, which was bad from the start and is now getting worse. I thought there was a two-week period where they seemed to scale it back. And they're like, no, it's happening. It's absolutely happening, mate. You're doing this whether you want to or not. He's going to be a heel that has lost a lot by the time he arrives at WrestleMania, when at the start of this year he was an undefeated babyface.
And I'll pick as a contender for the Royal Rumble a few months back.
They make it so hard on themselves.
And then they're going to get him to do that amazing flip that he does over the turnbuckle and be like, fixed.
Well, everybody gets a big moment at WrestleMania, don't they? So, like, he'll get his big moment, but the content... the context of it, the context of it will be hollow. The crowd won't react. He'll be a heel. It just, they've absolutely flushed him.
There's a champion who loses every week. Like, what?
Why hasn't Kevin Owens got a title shot, first of all?
Wow. There's no rules. There's no meaning. There's, like, literally, the thing that should portray you as dominant or good or the best at cheating if you're a heel, whatever, you are a loser for holding it. You lose. It's just, I said on the SmackDown review, I cannot believe there's actually an AEW versus WWE, like, culture war in the fandom. Like, one company, whether you think it's lame or if you think they do too many backstage interruptions, or if you think it's a little bit too smug and cute at times, it doesn't matter. It's still, like, it's still the most logical promotion.
It's a wrestling show.
It's a wrestling show. Like, the things that happen on this show, I was just watching it, like, I'm usually numb to it, but I'm like, what are you doing, man? What are you doing? It is so unfathomably counterproductive and stupid. There's one thing that I might give them a degree of credit for, and we'll get to it imminently, like a degree of it. Mm. Even then, like, it's just the stupidest. It's baffling. You're dealing with a faded mind.
It'd be funny if, like, sort of, Hamlet, like, double the amount of things Sidgwick liked in this Raw. Sidgwick liked one thing.
We got the announcement that they are having a women's elimination chamber match in Saudi Arabia to determine the number one contender for the Raw women's title at WrestleMania. A person who will face Becky Lynch or Lita after their match elimination chamber. So, Becky Lynch. And the competitors are Liv Morgan, Rhea Ripley, Bianca Belair, Yabu, Nikki A.S.H., and a mystery entrant.
Very excited for the other dark goddess to make her formal return. In an attempt to land on the grandest stage.
Or since any nostalgia will do, maybe Trish Stratus.
Yeah. I mean, and that makes more sense in a way than bringing back Alexa Bliss for it, because this is Bianca's match, isn't it?
I was going to say, I said this on the news, as much as I was like, oh, okay, Elimination Chamber match in Saudi Arabia for the women. That's really gone from 0 to 100 for you guys, hasn't it? Mm. But if you're going to try and re-establish Bianca Belair, this is the way to do it.
Yeah, and like, fair play to WWE putting them in literal ones instead of the country putting them in figurative ones. The generations.
Right, backstage.
Hey man, it's what happened, like, you know. It's out there, isn't it? It's yeah. Truth.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Backstage, Rollins is there with Owens. Seth is just, bloody hell, so gutted that Kevin Owens isn't in this chamber match. Owens says, don't worry, mate. You're with your influence, your support, and my determination and popularity. I've got a good feeling. I'm facing Austin Theory in a bit, and when I beat him, Postman Pierce and Sonya Deville, I've got no choice to replace him with me in that match. And Seth says, well, you know, I don't make the rules. And Owens says, don't worry.
Nobody does.
I'll make it happen. Seth says, I like your enthusiasm. I've got your back. I believe in you. And Owens goes, you're not lying to me, are you? Seth just goes, I'm a lot of things, but a lie is not one of them. Good luck. this is a let it play out thing, isn't it?
It is.
An actual good let it play out thing in WWE.
And as a match folded into this, can we do the Kevin Owens stuff? Because I'd really like to gush with praise for something on the show. Like,
should we save it till we get to the match?
Okay, yeah. Because there's the other Kevin stuff to follow is, I think, where the conversation really is. These are great together, but what this fed into later in the show was genuinely good, I thought.
Rubbish.
Oof.
Let's talk.
Whoa.
Let's talk about it.
Right, we had Miz TV with Rey and Dominic Mysterio, and I really like this because this is the first step on the road. Not even doing the gimmick here, Sig.
Been looking forward to this.
Miz is the poison that infects every relationship. He always just chips away at it. Anyway.
Yep, so I'm cashing in on my honey, mate.
He brings in...
I'm joking, I love it.
He brings out Rey and Dominic.
She puts it on me, for Christ's sake.
It's a little bit of conflict here, guys. I want to clear the air. Let's see what happened last week. And they just show the footage of him blatantly cheating to get Rey kicked out and then roll up Dominic. And Miz literally sees nothing wrong. Rey says, what are you talking about? It's clearly cheating. And Miz goes, wait a second. Are you saying you think I'm a cheater? I'm not a cheater. Just look at the Royal Rumble. Beth Phoenix hit me, kicked me. It's illegal. Oh, I see. When you or Eddie use underhanded tactics, you're beloved by the fans. But when I do it, I'm booed, I'm called a cheater. And I was like, yeah, that's right, Mike. You tell him. He says, I was cheating. I had the opportunity to be in the Elimination Chamber. I should be in a position to go in there. But who got that shot? You did. Against AJ Styles last week. I beat Drew when Drew was unbeatable. And Ray just went, well, with Lashley's help. With a brilliant, excellent timing there. Crowd chants that he's a cheater. Miz goes off on them, talks about Dancing with the Stars. He's the only two-time Grand Slam champion. But is his face on the posters, on the trucks, on the video game? Time to show the video game, which is out March 11th or whatever it bloody is. Why are you on there? What do you have that I don't? What about Maryse? Maybe you could have her on the cover. Maybe you could learn a thing or two from Maryse. And she says, yeah, I was great at the Rumble. Maybe you should call yourself Rey Mysterio.
Fantastic.
He went, oof. Oh, that's a tough sell, that one.
It's a mouthful.
That's me.
Line of the week.
Thanks for that, but I'm all right. Miz says, I'm just asking for a little bit of respect. Where is my appreciation? Where is my respect? And Dominic jumps on it and says, yeah, that's right. Where is your respect? You should show some respect to my father. And Miz is like, whoa, got his big boy pants on now, eh? Want a rematch tonight, me versus you?
No.
You got it. And then as they're squaring up, he goes, I've just noticed, Dominic, that you're taller than your dad. You sure he's not Eddie's son? Ray fires. Oh, let me at him. Dom holds his dad back and then shoves Miz, tripping him over the chairs into the corner, basically. Thoughts?
Very few. I don't care about Miz versus the Mysterios. If this is the direction for Rey Mysterio at WrestleMania, like, Jesus Christ. I don't care about any of this.
Well, I feel like my thoughts should go without saying, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Where is it?
90s!
Oh, not that one.
We're going to do it anyway. We're going to do it anyway. We're gonna do it anyway!
I want Barry from EastEnders to really go global. And as the number one wrestling podcast, we can do that.
Yes, we can.
There was something inside me so strong when I leant over to my wife as the Miz was celebrating winning the WWE title in November 2010 and saying, 12 years from now, my darling wife, 12 years from now,
oh God,
this is going to be tied in. You know Wilborn, who I haven't met yet for 7 years? We've kind of come up with this idea. And 12 years from tonight.
90!
This is going to be the catalyst. This man right here is going to be the catalyst to the most heartbreaking father-son breakup in wrestling history. And ever since then, have we not said it was always going to be the Miz?
Yeah.
The lethal dose of poison in the Mysterio father-son dynamic is going to be Mike Mizanin. Malachi's got his toxic jizz. We've got our toxic Miz. And yeah, finally it's happening. The road to WrestleMania, Mysterio versus Mysterio, starts here. Like we always said. I'm just glad to see it play out. Like we've often said, WWE say let it play out. we've always said with this one, let this play out. We will get where it needs to go, and here we are.
Just what was next on the show?
It was Dominic Mysterio versus the police. Maurice blatantly tripped Dominic, but instead of for the ref calling for a DQ, he kicked her out. And then as The Miz tried to take advantage, Ray actually tripped The Miz for real. And that allowed Dominic to schoolboy him, get the victory, which was described by Byron Saxton as the biggest win of his career.
He is 26, was it?
25, I think.
25. Shout out to Ian on Twitter, who pointed out that Dominic now is the same age Mysterio was when he was unmasked in WCW in terms of legacy, and the way this company talks about him as if he is five is Well, there's two people I can think of that they've infantilized. One's Alexa Bliss, and that's for all the ugly reasons. And one's Hornswoggle, because they associated being short with being a child, being a toddler. How do they see him as this young little boy? He's 26.
It's so funny because the layers on top of it, like the more you dig deep into their perception of people's ages, just owns so goddamn hard. Like the man is 25 years old. All of the headliners are like north of 40 or approaching 40.
Unless you're a woman.
Yeah. They don't get what it's like to be like any age. They just don't get it.
What are kids like nowadays, huh?
They're 25.
Dominic is, based on Vince McMahon's issue with the WrestleMania naming convention, he's 5 years away from his age, never been mentioned again.
Yes.
Right there.
Yes. That's too old.
How is he 25?
Yeah.
25th anniversary of your birth. anyway, then we got Nikki A.S.H. versus Bianca Belair. Bianca Belair dominated early on, and Nikki took advantage as she was posing at one point to grab her and target her leg, wrap it up in the ropes, apply a single leg crab. So Bianca Belair had to do her awesome offense, as she often does, this time with one leg, which was even more incredible. Fall away slam, body slams, delayed vertical suplex while she's basically hopping. Nikki fights back and hits a tornado DDT, but Bianca Belair kicks Nikki's head basically into the ring post, hits the KOD, gets the victory, and get some momentum before the Elimination Chamber.
Like, impossible to care. I like watching Bianca Belair wrestle, but like, so what? It's just so what? I'll wait for the matches that actually matter before I can like possibly emotionally invest. I'm just begging them. They've booked Elimination Chamber, right? I'm just begging them to sort of inject any of this with some creativity. Could these matches have not been like Bianca Belair versus Carmella, and that's a qualifier, and that's how Bianca Belair gets in, and just run six qualifiers instead. You've got, fair enough, if you see these five as the best five, there's five other jobbers that they can defeat, right? Or it's Elimination Chambers, so you beat the clock stuff for,
ooh, yeah,
for who's going to get like the best place in the match. Whatever. Something, anything.
Any trope that you've got.
You've got loads of them.
I love a beat the clock.
I
hate it.
I mean, I don't mind it because, like, within the confines of a WWE, Cedric's going to hate me using this word in terms of WWE, in terms of one of their telecasts, it just fills a night.
I don't just say broadcast then.
It's something that some talk about, isn't it? Beat the clock.
Telecast is a...
is a Tony Schiavone word.
Yeah. And Tony Schiavone does not belong in this company unless it's in 1989 and it rules.
I mean, that was some of the soundproofing falling off the wall. So clearly, us mentioning telecast in this podcast, the universe does not like that.
This match and this sort of thing they're doing with Bianca Belair, it's exposed me as quite the hypocrite, because I keep saying AEW, right, do just some matches. Not everything has to have an episodic slant to it. Make, like, bridge the gap between Dark and Dynamite. And now that I'm kind of seeing this, but on WWE TV, where it's like, oh, they're having someone win some boring 5-minute matches to remind the viewer, oh, they're up in the rankings, we like them. Take this person seriously. Here they are winning matches to no other purpose other than to win matches. And I'm really bored. And it really telegraphs the outcome. So if you hide on Dark, it's probably a bit better.
I will say this shout out to Scott Carlson, who writes our ups and downs article at whatculture.com for Monday Night Raw, who literally called this the moment they announced Riddle versus Rollins. He was like, oh, yeah, I forgot the dreaded momentum heading into Elimination Chamber. So, yeah, although I will say, I'm glad they did at least an injury angle here, i.e., of course Bianca Belair beats Nikki A.S.H., but watching Bianca Belair doing all the stuff on one leg just reminded me how mean she is and how great it's going to be when hopefully she wins the world title at WrestleMania.
She's the best at most things, and they shouldn't have buried her to reach that point in the first place.
Yes, granted. Right, something I'm really intrigued to know your thoughts on came next, and it involves the 24/7 championship. Truth Akira Tozawa and Tamina are running around trying to find Dana Brooke.
What a life.
When she pops out along with Reggie from behind some boxes, and she just wants to say to Reggie, to thank you for everything that he's done and for looking out for her and helping her retain this 24/7 championship for so long. She pops a little peck on his cheek. He says, good question for you, Dana. What does all this mean? So she put him straight in the friend zone. That's what she did right there. She says, I don't want any of this to change. I just really love us being such good friends. And then there's a real bit of sexual tension.
God, my God.
And then they leg it before Truth and Co. come back. And Truth says, you can run, but you can't hide. And they say, they've been running, and they are still hiding. And he's an idiot who goes in the wrong direction, basically. But we're getting another romance storyline, Michael Hamflett.
Right, I got to be honest, Wilbon, you said a phrase that kind of made my skin crawl there. Friend zone. And not because I just spent most of my teenage years in it. Because I'm grateful culturally that's not really a thing anymore. That's about 10 years past its sell-by date, the idea of a friend zone. But luckily, WWE is 20 years behind the cultural curve, so we're going to get it every fucking week. That comes with all these implications and expectations that were like, Reggie's done her loads of favours. How can she not repay him with full sex and love and adoration? That's her duty as a woman. That's how WWE are absolutely going to frame this. So expect weeks and weeks of that. And when Reggie inevitably turns on and rolls up for the 24/7 title, it's going to be like, well, he had to get a prize somewhere.
Bitch.
Bitch. He just says, grafted for that, and then runs away with the belt. Like, gets back on the run. Dana's not got the belt anymore. I would rather this ended in, like WWE surprises, and this ending just like an actual romance thing. But it's going to go one of two ways. Reggie's going to get pretty ugly about it, or they're going to go full comedy. And then he's going to be like, you know what? Like, I thought we were friends. I actually think it's more than that. I think I love you. And then he's like, I love you too. No. And rolls up and takes
title.
I love
you too, the 24/7 champ.
He's covered all the bases there. This is so horrendously acted. Like, you know this because you did the...
You don't cover all the bases when you're in the friend zone. The
sexual tension.
Yeah, it's just weird because she'd already said, I love this the way it is, right? This isn't a developing thing and we're thinking about each other all the time. I like you as a friend. Then he decides to do the whole, maybe if I try and create this moment between us, I'll get deeper than that and all my hard work will pay off. It's not a meet cute, is it? No. This Reggie versus thing. No. He's grafting. He's insidiously grafting. And it's not the way to get relationships. If the spark's there, it's there. Mm. And if it isn't, it isn't. The more you try to create that spark, the more problematic this all is, the less agency the other person has, the more you're trying to confuse that person with your value. There's no value, there's chemistry, and it's there or it's not. Stop grafting, Reginald. You make my goddamn skin crawl, Reginald. You're honestly one of the worst people I've ever met.
Yeah, I quite liked it. Then we got Kevin Owens versus Austin Theory. Some nice callbacks in this. It was like a Carter Omega, the callbacks.
Shut up, man, you c***.
Callbacks.
I mean, the G1 sprint, I actually get where he's coming from.
Callbacks to when Theory threw Owens headfirst into the steel steps. I did remember that spot, to be fair, because I thought that looked like it sucked the first time, so I was glad they didn't do it a second time. Owens fought him off. Hit a senton off the step to take us into a break. When we come back, Owens is hitting a cannonball, a splash of his off the apron. I like the fact that he was obviously hugely popular here, despite sort of being a heel. And on commentary, they were like, yeah, he's a heel, but I mean, he's not as bad as Austin Theory, so everyone likes him now. He goes for his stunner. Theory counters it into a back suplex for a two count. Owens hit a rolling fireman's carry off the top, which got a huge bap. He goes for a senton. This time, Theory gets his knees up, but they go counter for counter, and out of nowhere, Owens hits him with a stunner for the pinfall victory. Really liking watching Austin Theory in the ring a lot in the last few months. I'd add this one to the collection, and this can sort of be the point that we ease into the Kevin Owens let it play out storyline.
Yeah, Theory was good again here. right, I think, to put him over. Owens, though, having one of them nights that you just, like, not the WWE don't know what they've got, because obviously they've, you would hope, paid a small fortune to keep it, I guess. But Kevin Owens is one of these few wrestlers that is often, Brian used to be good at this as well, a really difficult task of it not being clear if you're a heel or a babyface, and actually that being a little bit part of the story. Often it's just because they've got, there's no goodness in that company, and even the babyfaces are nasty. But in Owens' case, at the moment, he's having to serve multiple masters at once, and he did this in the context of a wrestling match. He positioned himself, as you say, as kind of like the, not so much a lesser of two evils, but just forcing the fans to be like, well, who do you actually like more? Right, well, in which case, I'm going to show a bit of ass for a little bit, and it's going to be my comeback that you're going to pop for, without at all betraying who he is currently, which is the dickheaded version. Mm. He's a treasure, Kevin Owens.
The match was decent. I thought they did a better one the other week, and I absolutely hated everything about what happens next.
Well, what happened next, in chronological order, was Riddle talking to Orton about how excited he was for the tag titles. And Orton said, you know, you've got a huge opportunity to main event WrestleMania on top of that being in the chamber. But tonight you've got to focus on Seth Rollins. Riddle said, I am focused. He said, right, walked off. And then came back and told Orton they want to have a party next week, toga party. And Orton went, just focus on tonight. good comedy stuff, this.
Yeah.
Something for the preview, isn't it? Broga party.
It's not in the right order, but I feel like we should circle back and do the Owens stuff, because I feel like that's what you want to talk about, yeah. Sige. Owens goes to see, this is after the Lita and Lynch segment we're going to talk about in a second. Owens goes to see Postman Pierce and Sonya Deville. Sonya Deville's got her arm in a sling thanks to Ronda Rousey's actions on Friday. And Owens says, look, because I won, does that mean I replace Austin Theory in the chamber? And they said, no. The qualifying match was last week, and Owens was devastated. And they said, look, no, it's not going to happen. I'm not even sure if you're going to even feature, be at WrestleMania. He says, you can't do this. You can't do this to the people, myself. You can't do this to the people of Texas. I love Texas. Texas loves me. He talks about all of his history there, winning the Universal Championship, having his first WrestleMania there. He knows everything about Texas, the cowboy boots, the rodeos, the bulls. He points at the bull tattoo on his arm and says, this might as well be a picture of Texas, basically. he says, I need this. Just please think about this. You weren't a fan.
I hate this so goddamn much. It is unreal. They told you that the match you've just spent, how long did Kevin Owens versus Austin Theory go this week?
About 10 minutes,
right.
Yeah.
A complete waste of your bastard time. So, he reckons he's an idiot with a bad argument. I've gone 50-50, so flip a coin, which victory matters. So he looks like an idiot. Oh, well, I won this one. Forget about last week. Everybody fucking else has in this company. So can I get to WrestleMania? And she went, no, last week's result was final. Why then have I watched a rematch between Kevin Owens and Austin Theory, sank 10 minutes into this, right? Because I don't watch it on double speed. Like, my mind just can't work it. It just annoys me in this weird way that I can't get. So I get up early to watch this shit, right? I'm sorry. I'm making more work for you, Wilborn.
It's fine.
He's just wrestled Austin Theory, right? 10 minutes of my life. Like, I haven't been doing anything else, right? And then he goes backstage. I won this one. Forget about last week. And this Sonya Deville character says that the result of last week's match is final. Why book this one, right? What... If it's got literally no dramatic ramifications, if it doesn't alter what might happen to the respective performers in the future, if it doesn't reshape the complexion of Elimination Chamber, what is the kayfabe purpose for wasting my goddamn time? Watching Kevin Owens babyface, heel, gonna turn babyface, whatever, right? He's Big Show, he's a prop device, a plot device at this point. He's not a genuine character who I can believe in. I've got no idea what to think of this guy. Looking like an obsequious, just little idiot, being a little whining bitch to management about, oh, WrestleMania, my big dream. Are you, Mark?
Mark Owen?
I'll tell you that. Why did this match happen if the result last week of last week's match stood? I don't know why I'm so furious about this, because this kind of bollocks happens every single week, but this one particularly infuriated me because they told me the reason why they did this match was to create this segment,
right? But it's quicksand. It's on a foundation of quicksand in terms of the logic. Terrible. It's the worst television show of all time. It is the worst television of all time, and it's still better than SmackDown.
I really liked the development and forgot and instantly forgot about the bollocks, as you're kind of allowed to do on Raw. I really liked the development of, I was looking for where exactly we were headed with Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins, either as this tag team that we're quite enjoying or as a WrestleMania rematch because they're going to explode quicker than RK-Bro or whatever. And I got it. Like, Sidgwick's right. All of this was a device that existed to get to the segment because it was the segment that mattered. But then, yes, doesn't that make everything else redundant? Yes. Everything's always redundant in WWE. And it just obviously, as you pointed out yourself there, Cedric, you don't know why it was this specific thing, because there could be 10 things a week that you could be angry about. Like, this wasn't the one that got to me, but there will be countless others that do. Kevin Owens gradually getting more and more angry with an increasingly babyface Seth Rollins for getting these opportunities that he wants. And for some reason, well, I say some reason, no reason, no logical reason whatsoever, because they just change their minds on a whim every single week. He's banging his head against this wall. Bigger picture, he's the stupid person for picking that wall. He should have gone and banged his head against a different wall on a different night of the week.
Forbidden.
The forbidden wall. But unfortunately, he is where he is now. So he's having to, you know, in kayfabe, none of this makes any sense. Like, I completely surrender to that. What I do like is that we understand who Kevin Owens is, and he's going to justify that his WrestleMania dream is all about, like being able to show his kids what a good role model their dad is by wrestling in the, on the biggest show in the world. And he's going to have to smash Seth Rollins to pieces for that opportunity, isn't he? He's going to have to get his match by battering Seth Rollins so much that that match creates itself. And he says, well, look, like, I did it at WrestleMania. I jumped off a sign at an empty WrestleMania thinking what we're going to do here when we're in Texas. My home away from home, which of course sets up Steve Austin coming out and sunning him at the end of that. In Texas. When he comes out in a Owens 316 shirt for this year's WrestleMania.
Play out. Circling back to the segment that we missed before that, actually, Veer Mahan is still coming, and then we got the Lita and Becky Lynch segment. Lita came out saying how excited she is to be on Raw in Denver. Talked about how thrilled she was to be in the Rumble, facing the likes of Charlotte Flair, Ronda Rousey, Bianca Belair, Rhea Ripley. There was one name missing though, Becky Lynch. She started talking about her when Becky Lynch came out to interrupt. Lynch talked about Rousey running scared before saying it was so great to hear her teenage idol say such nice things about her. She said, I declined your challenge last week, but that was for a reason. I idolized you, Lita, growing up. And a lot on top of that, a lot of people turned up my nose at me, turned up their nose at me when I arrived here in WWE, but you didn't. And I was really grateful for that. And the crowd cheers. She said, look, there'd be no Becky Lynch without Lita, but now there's a Becky Lynch, there should be no Lita. She said, look, can you imagine an idol of yours trying to take everything away from you just before WrestleMania? She said the title's the most important thing to her. This is the most important time of the year. I've had to get rid of friends and fans to keep my title. I've got no problem doing that. And I have no problem putting you down. And Lita said, look, I'll admit you are the odds-on favourite, but I've got no problem being the underdog. I was a punk rock dumpster-diving kid chasing my dreams. But thanks to the fans, I became a four-time women's champion. And she lived her dream, basically. And she hasn't had a title shot in 15 years, but the fans still support her. She liked her odds, and she said, you should worry about when I become a five-time champion. Lynch said that the fans were all Lita would have. She attacked Lita. She actually beat her down. But she made the mistake of going back for just one more kicking, got caught with a twist of fate, and Lita even broke out the moonsault for her, Hamlet.
Love this. Loving this. The perfect use of a legend, and God, I wish they'd do it more and understand the merit you get from it. We talk a lot about the Royal Rumble title matches being an opportunity to give a challenger a free hit that you know they're going to lose, and we know Lita's going to lose here. But the same applies to the pre-WrestleMania stuff when you've got the likes of the Royal Rumble and the Elimination Chamber determining the challengers. The champion is kind of left with nothing to do while they await their WrestleMania match. This, I'm going to bring him up again, The Miz. This evokes memories of The Miz and Jerry Lawler doing much the same. Something to do because the actual match awaits. Lita's promo game is better than it ever was when she was a full-timer. Like, speaking with the confidence of somebody that obviously knows that this isn't her weekly pressure anymore, that can just come in and do it for the love. Completely bought.
And the money.
And all the horrible blood money that she wants disavowed. Becky Lynch spoke with conviction because we already know it to be true, but did the exact right amount of putting over the legend before putting over why she needed to beat the legend, made the title feel important, made this actually feel like an emulation of competition. Not a single complaint. Even the moonsault was executed really well, and that's never a guarantee either.
I absolutely didn't hate this at all. I thought this was staggeringly competent by WWE standards for all of the reasons that my esteemed colleague has just outlined. I just don't really feel a great deal of emotion for it. I don't know why. I just hate this product. Hate it all. So when they do something like this, it almost makes you resent the stuff that they do so badly all of the other time. And it's just so weird how if you aren't, it's like just such a hateful organization that if you are not in it, and Vince McMahon doesn't have to look at your stupid millennial face all the time. Someone he once thought nothing more of than a whore,
yeah,
who had to do live sex celebrations. If you don't, you're goddamn fired. It's now lionized because she isn't there all the time. Doesn't have to look at her bloody face.
Oh, like, you made me money once. I remember you.
Yeah. Absolutely. So it pisses me off. But like, taking away all the macro complaints I often have, this is really, really quite well done. I even thought the actual brawl component was genuinely really well done. There's an art to it where you can't make the baby face look like a dick. You can't do too much heat. You can't take the heat from the heel. Like, it's an underlooked part of the business, how to do this kind of post-match brawl and who comes out of it looking good. I thought they both came out looking great, and I thought they told the story that they'd articulated really well in the physicality. Basically, Becky Lynch is better than Lita, but Lita is not backing down from this whatsoever. I just thought this was really quite well done.
Yeah, really enjoyed that segment. It was followed, obviously, by the Owens stuff. And then we got Liv Morgan versus...
Skip.
Do you have it? It was now. This is a momentum going towards
Skip
the Elimination Chamber, which Doudrop won with the Vader bomb. Enough of all this, then. It's now time for this.
It's short. It's crap. It's wrestling related. The five-star review.
Nailed it! This week's five-star review is brought to you by Nick Degg. If you want to suggest something short, crap, and wrestling-related for us to review...
Nick Egg!
You can do so by subscribing to What Culture Wrestling on iTunes and leaving us a five-star review on there. Nick Degg writes, "This show, man, honestly, for a long while, I was burnt out on wrestling podcasts. So many around, talking for hours and going in circles. What Culture Wrestling quickly became my go-to favorite. Manageable episodes, incredibly insightful and open-minded analysis, and most importantly, entertaining. Thanks, Dadley Boys and Wilborn, plus the rest of the crew, for keeping me company on my day and watching stuff so I don't have to in the case of Manal." For my Raw review, five-star review recommendation, please could you cover an Abraham Washington show from WWE CW? Enjoy. Don't put the enjoy at the end, okay? Because you know what you're doing there.
That's reminding me. A lot of people do not watch Raw but listen to this podcast. I would like to reiterate, okay, follow my rant. Austin Theory beat Kevin Owens last week to enter the Elimination Chamber, the result of which stood. So why do Kevin Owens versus Austin Theory? Just to reiterate, they did it last week and the result stood. So why do it this week? Why? What purpose did the match serve? It's not a match between competitors in the match of who can have the most momentum, which is the thinnest excuse to just bash out some content. So what was tell me now, Wilborn. Don't ever say, it's the best episode, it's the best show of the week.
That's SmackDown. Right, let's take ourselves back, Michael Hampton, to 2009. And the Abraham Washington show. What's the backstory around this?
Well, speaking of no purpose whatsoever, the Abraham Washington show. This was obviously... awful time for WWE developmental, awful time for WWE's main roster in general, of which ECW was kind of a part of as the C brand. They were just plucking characters out of thin air. They had a thing called the New Talent Initiative for a while, where wrestlers would just come out and wrestle, and they would either get over in front of the live crowd or they wouldn't. Most of the gimmicks were terrible. Most of them didn't get over. Abraham Washington sort of had a better opportunity than all the rest because he was given a talk show. You know, it works in WWE. Theoretically, you've got time to maybe get some catchphrases over, get some memorable moments over. This often felt agented to achieve the literal opposite. They would sometimes try to give him the worst material imaginable to sell Tony Atlas doing a big laugh. Like, completely counterintuitive. Tony Atlas, well into his 50s, 60s by this point, either had before or after, I can't even remember, managed Mark Henry with his sleeves cut off to show that he had bigger arms than the rest of the roster because he probably wasn't being tested. So just, yeah, this never particularly got Abraham Washington over. But it, like a lot of things in ECW C brand years and NXT and then NXT Redemption, has a certain cult following for being so bad that if you leave it long enough, it sort of becomes watchable. It is dying in the buildings. Like, that's what, like, we're going to have some fun with this. But the live crowd...
Dying on YouTube as well, judging by the view count.
74 likes.
Oh, like, the crowds do not know. They don't want... They can't be asked to boo.
When did they film ECW as well, before SmackDown?
Yeah. Like, they can't be asked to boo. There's nobody to cheer. And, like... Abraham Washington himself isn't enough of a star or a known figure to carry any of this. It was like always, always doomed, but WWE just do not care. They would throw any urge at the wall on that show and see what stuck.
Yeah, the whole, to just distill it further, the whole idea was, oh my God, one of them can kind of talk a bit. One of these developmental guys can kind of talk. Oh, you can have a talk show.
Yeah.
Because I don't think you could do that else.
And then he went on to manage the primetime players, of course. Anyway, in the clip that we've chosen, we get welcome to the critically acclaimed Abraham Washington.
Too bad for him.
Not for me. Washington show.
He's gone.
By Abraham Washington. They've got a big applause sign flashing up on the tron and just gets slight boos, yeah, effectively. He talks about the fact he hasn't been there for the past few weeks because NBC have been trying to seal him away and give him a job. They wanted him to replace Conan O'Brien on The Late Show and not Jay Longchin Leno.
To which Tony Atlas says,
"Go on,
no, you're doing it."
I love his laugh, man.
There's a couple of times in this where you forget about it just long enough that when you're reminded, huge bab.
He says, "Do you know why I turned down that job, Tony?" And Tony Atlas says, "Because you're not that good."
He gets us.
He says, "No, you big dummy. I turned down the..."
You big dummy.
I like it because the Atlas off mic kind of goes, "Hey."
Hey.
He says, "I turned down the $40 million a year job because the WWE Universe would just miss me too much."
It never works. There's a lot of NXT 2.0 energy about it. It's like the guys that could be elsewhere but there. It's like, "But I wanted to come here." Why? You just do not believe it.
Anyway, he welcomes his guest, Christian, ECW champion. Was he the last ECW champion when it closed its doors?
No, they were too vindictive for that, weren't they?
Oh, yeah, of course. They gave it to Ezekiel Jackson on the last
night. Benoit Turner's favourite wrestler is Ezekiel Jackson.
Huge pop for the final burial of Blue Dot. Blue Dot!
So Christian's cutting a dull promo about how long he's been ECW champion. He's taken on every challenger. He's beaten them. He's looking forward to future challengers. And then out comes Zack Ryder. Genuinely forgot this bit of Zack Ryder's career ever even happened. He's a heel.
Mm-hmm.
He's flanked by Rosa Mendez, of course.
Why?
Just wanted a Brooklyn Nine-Nine reference in there. And he says... who cares? Let's talk about some real news. Big picture of Shane Helms getting arrested on the Titantron. Was this about the bit that made you laugh a little bit in the office?
No.
Okay.
Absolutely not.
I'm glad. The Hurricane has been...
It was one of Atlas's later...
I thought it was. a drunken brawl, I believed he got arrested for.
Yeah, I forgot to check this before we came in, but I had a feeling this involved Chris Jericho and some... like capacity, but maybe he was either in or out of the company at the time, or he was Chris Jericho, so they elected not to. Maybe it was a different Hurricane Helm situation. I mean, it's a bit weird, isn't it? The energy, the vibe changes all of a sudden.
I was like, we're going down this road, are we? Okay. Yeah. And Zack Ryder says, "This guy's running around claiming to be a superhero," and then he gets in a drunken brawl like the posers in Jersey Shore.
Well, yeah, was this 2009?
Yeah.
What a great role model. A representative of ECW. And then Zack Ryder says, "Stand back! There's a criminal coming through!"
Yeah, Chris Jericho was also... you seen this? You heard about this? Chris Jericho was also arrested, and he didn't get buried on TV because he's a star.
Yeah.
Also.
He says...
Shame on Hurricane Helms.
He says... "I should be described as the heart and soul superhero of ECW." just a tiny bit of Matt Cardona there, that wasn't mm-hmm. it? Just a brief glimpse of what we're going to get.
An ECW original.
13 years later.
I mean, apparently, according to this, Hurricane did take it a bit further.
Okay.
Shame on him.
Helms made a mistake, says Christian. Everyone makes a mistake. For example, our GM Tiffany. Forgot about her as well. This really was the death rattle of ECW,
oh, yeah.
Wasn't it? Uh-huh. She made a mistake when she gave Abe his own talk show. I made a mistake when I agreed to be on it. You make mistakes too, Zach. You got up, you looked in the mirror and thought, yeah, my hair looks cool.
Gap followed by.
But the biggest mistake.
Was you not going, that's one that popped me.
Absolutely.
An off camera, just like that.
No, just like nothing from this crowd, and then a gap, and then Tony Atlas remember. Oh, yeah, my bit.
I just wanted to get to the next line. The biggest mistake you made is when you hooked up with Tila Tequila over here.
He doesn't know what Tila Tequila is.
No. They get into a big shoving match, and Abe wraps up the show there. What a classic. sorry, I've messed up the punctuation here. What a classic.
A classic of the genre in the fact that every episode pretty much went this way. I forgot, so I remember just really briefly on Zack Ryder, I forgot that there was this, I remember the one trouser leg and the Jersey Shore rip-off stuff and all that. I forgot how dialed back it was. And how much he turned this up to get it over. And I can only assume that's why Triple H hated him so much. I bet he saw this like bland milquetoast guy and was like, love it. And then he like started really spiking his hair, doing the like woo-woo, you know, and stuff. And he's like, I don't get that. I'm going to pedigree you every single week until you learn. Get normal again, Zach. Get normal. Get boring. Just the way I like it. Like, just the way Richard Fleer would want to see you work. See you want to work. We can walk Broadway's with a stupid haircut. I forgot that he was kind of this bland before he figured out that the thing you needed for this character was to just be as obnoxious with it as possible. No wonder people fell in love with it.
So we go to the comments section. Once again, these do not reflect the views of myself, the Dudley Boys, or anyone at What Culture Wrestling. Sparse, I think it's fair to say, these comments. But I did go down a bit of a rabbit hole, which you may realise when we get to the third comment. KB writes, this guy was the definition of natural charisma. I really hope that they're talking about Christian and not Abraham Washington there.
Tony Atlas, isn't it?
Tony Atlas sounds like Barney Rubble, writes Jason Watson.
It's
fair. Yeah.
It's a story around this time. Might be a couple of years before. Was it not CM Punk saying that Tony Atlas didn't know that he was a trainee at like one of the developmentals or something? Yeah. And he just called him out for it. And he's, I'm a worker, Tony. Like, go and get my bags.
Then the comments take a turn, Michael Sitchin.
I'm sure they
do. Can you guess who the comments focus on in this segment with Abraham Washington, Christian, and Zack Ryder and Tony Atlas?
Is it Rosa Mendez?
It is Rosa Mendez. Yeah. It is Rosa Mendez. MHS Football 76, right? I'd do anything for her. Anything. So that's nice to know.
All right, Reggie.
K97 writes, I didn't even know this was a thing. I have a nostalgia boner right now.
God.
You want?
Mo continues the thread here on Rosa Mendez.
Right.
I love Rosa Mendez and I love ass.
He wrote that.
Mo.
God, he's keeping well. He's still on a mission, but it's for ass.
Yes. Recently, he's doing better after his health.
Oh God, I didn't even realize that.
Oh, okay, okay. Okay.
Just doing a move bit. Oh God, yeah.
Jump down your throat.
No,
I don't think he did. By the phrase, because he's more sensitive than that.
Yeah. And get well soon, Mo, if he's poorly.
Yeah, he's really poorly.
Final comment comes from Jack.
We love Mo.
Yeah,
culture.
We're Mo guys.
Jack Doyle. This clip we watched is about 4 minutes. About halfway through. Is when Zack Ryder and Rosa Mendez walks out. And once again, these do not reflect the views of myself, the Daddy Boys, Rock Culture Wrestling. Because Jack Doyle, just if anyone was watching and was like, ugh, let's get to the bit with Zack Ryder and Rosa Mendez. Right, if you skip to 205, you will jizz.
Oh my God. I love this. Right, I love this, right?
If on the internet where there is pornography.
What's the minutes again?
205.
If you skip to 205, you will see
a clothed woman. So sexy to this man that presumably he's flaccid watching this whole thing. That the mere sight of Rosa Mendez in a clingy dress will just engorge his cock.
Blood, cock, spunk. Whoa.
Which will spontaneously ejaculate. Like, the second enough blood in it can do the job.
Just imagine like yourself in the house. All right, yeah, see you later. Have a good day. His curtains close. Abraham Washington Show, 2009. Get in.
So thanks to Nick Day.
That was quick. You will chill.
You will jizz.
You will jizz.
If you skip to 205, you will jizz.
You don't touch cock. I don't actually touch my cock.
What's if you skip to 205, you will jizz?
Yeah.
Nobody's ever said that about the Cruiserweight Show.
Yeah. I love that. Just like, ah. That was quick.
Yeah, because maybe it wasn't excitement, that the comment. It was a warning. Warning, if you get to 205, bad things.
Well, that's the South part with the brown noise where everybody hits himself.
You don't actually have to touch your cat to manipulate yourself the issue.
So thanks to Nick Degg for suggesting that. If you want to suggest something short, crap, and wrestling related for us to review.
You will jizz.
You will jizz.
Touch my cat. Until I get started the Abraham Washington Show starring Rosa Mendez.
We started Come Tuesday early today.
So thanks to Nick Degg for that. What a Culture Wrestling on iTunes if you want to suggest something short, crap, and wrestling related for us to review. We return to Monday Night Raw, and we're so close to the main event, Sid.
Oh,
wait. Yeah.
Oh, great.
There's literally another Alexa Bliss segment and then the main event.
We're so close, and Alexa Bliss is coming, so we're going to be so close, and then you will jizz.
Bliss cried and handed back the fucking doll. But he said, you know, I know you got upset, but you remain calm, and that's progress, said the porn star / psychiatrist that she's working with.
Is there something about the fact that he all wears black? Black tie, black shirt, black suit.
The Black Goddess.
Show off the white jizz.
Bliss talked about getting cut off by another driver, but she didn't retaliate. She took a deep breath and remained
calm. What if he's an agent of Wyndham?
And if, like, imagine 8 to 10 weeks of, like, as Twitter tells us, the return of the Dark Goddess. And then, honestly, like, Vince just wakes up and says, where's that fucking friend? And he just brings him back and that is it. Just all dropped. She's in a match at WrestleMania and he comes out of a box-like structure. And it's a bit of LTST and then make friends.
Well, if she's in the chamber, that is a bit of a box-like structure.
LTST.
She got, someone took a parking spot.
The Fiend's got a lot of history in Saudi Arabia.
And then she was in the store buying groceries. And some evil creature of a woman took a, like, she was in a queue for bloody ages and someone just came
in. I thought Lily was a maid.
Well, it's what I don't get, because I also, no one ever says, oh yeah, I saw this evil creature of a woman.
Yeah, but she's crazy.
Oh, sorry, yeah.
Except, like, all the delusions have happened and we've seen them.
Yeah, she's, and she describes a woman with skulls for teeth. It's Lily, basically. And she said she chucked her down her aisle and twapped her with a loaf of bread. And the guy went, I think we've got more work to do.
Yeah, I got a job for you right here.
This was a bit of a zeitgeist heist from Raw, this was. They've been listening. We know they always listen. There was a real story. Have you seen this? Have you heard about this? Where, like, a woman tried to buy someone's baby in a supermarket in America. This is for real. She got arrested for it. And I think they've had a bit of a zeitgeist heist thing between this and Andrade and Darby Allin. I wish to buy that boy. I think, like, wrestling is listening.
What do you think of this segment?
Nothing.
Yeah, I thought so. Main event time. Riddle versus Seth Rollins. Now, just a bit of a... On the preview, what did you say this match was... Who did you say was going to be victorious in this match?
No one.
Oh, what did you say was going to happen then?
There'd be no finish.
Okay, let's see. Michael Cidric, shall we? Riddle talked to Kevin Patrick about being champion going into WrestleMania beforehand. No one cares. Entertaining little match to start off with. I mean, Rollins powerbombed Riddle right into the barricade in a minute into the match. And I was looking just to see, like you said, with the, let's just say, history between these two gentlemen and their respective partners, whether there was going to be a few more shots laid in. And I couldn't really tell, but they worked nicely together, I thought. Rollins dominates early on, but Riddle came back. Pele kick, forearm, suplex. Riddle hit him with a PK and then took Rollins out with a dive. In the midst of all this, though, Kevin Owens runs out of the crowd, attacked Riddle, and we got a DQ finish. Oh! Who could have seen this coming?
Everyone.
So Orton ran down, laid out.
It's how you advance a Fued. is how I get. as I often get told on Twitter.
Orton ran down, laid out Owens with an RKO, and when we come back, it's now a tag match. Seth Rollins and Kevin Owens versus Riddle and Randy Orton. There was bits of entertainment in this, particularly Rollins is fighting. They spill to the outside, him and Orton, I think, and he goes, hey, come on, Kev, get involved. Kevin's like selling still from the RKO, and he's like, ah, don't touch me. I just got you with an RKO, you prick, sort of thing. In the midst of all this, Rollins gets backdropped onto the announce table by Orton. Riddle comes in, but Owens comes off and cuts him off with a super kick, and they work over Riddle. Riddle finally dodges a Rollins frog splash, hits Owens with a knee strike, makes the hot tag to Orton again. Huge bap for Randy Orton here. Hits Rollins with clotheslines, a power slam. Hits Kevin Owens with a power slam as well. Hits a draping DDT. But Rollins blocks an RKO. Riddle tags himself in. He knocks down Owens, knocks down Rollins with kicks. But Rollins fights back with the elbow strikes and the hidden blade thing or whatever it is that he does. Curb stomps Riddle. 1, 2, 3. The new number one contenders for the tag team titles. I've had a bit of a roller coaster tonight because they get pinned in the main event. Yes, Orton hits Owens with an RKO following the match, but Rollins just laughs and walks away.
50-50 in everybody within an inch of their lives. So, but it's nothing new. You know,
people who are going to be in the chamber who they should be expected to think, yeah, oh, they've got a chance of winning.
Yeah. There's like, nobody's a winner. Nobody's even really particularly a loser because you just trained.
They're all losers.
I mean, they're all losers, yeah, but nobody next week. Like, the Street Profits lost tonight, but they won't feel like losers next week. That's just how WWE works.
They're all losers to the world.
One of these days, WWE are going to try and sell this as a way bigger match than this impromptu Raw tag was, and you're going to have to forget about it because they're going to ask, like, a pay-per-view build of it, or, you know, something like that where it's going to have supposed stakes. They've just let it fritter away as a... As impromptu nonsense.
I mean, I've got no thoughts on this whatsoever. I couldn't... It was some decent work. Of course there was. A triangle Hurricane Rana thing to the outside by Riddle to Seth Rollins. Great. Funny. Like, genuinely, like, they... And I'm watching a thing, and this ain't going to a finish. And if it does go to a finish, I think less of someone who I'm meant to be invested in a feature match in, like, what, 2 weeks. That no good can come of this. No good can come of this. Therefore, I'm not going to engage my brain and enjoy the good work for what it was, good work. Obviously, it's a hot take. I'm not goddamn Nostradamus. Not particularly prescient. Yeah? I'm not trying to be like the guy from Network. I can see the things they can't. Like, I know what it is. Like, I'm not working. It's like, there are other podcasts who go, hey, we told you all a goddamn long. Like, no one has to be told. So I couldn't engage. I do the tag and I'm thinking, if the heels win here, and was it like clean? I can barely remember.
Relatively so.
Relatively clean. I respect the heels more because they won a match. Like, okay, bro, won a quiz. So I respect the bit of the heels' endeavor and purpose more. The show sucks.
Maybe it's LTST that they just can't work together, these two. And when they eventually do split, I'll say, well, signs were already there, guys.
They don't know if they want to do the match or if they just like the fact that this is popping. Still plan.
It just felt like, and I know stuff came afterwards with Liv Morgan and the Dujab, for example. It felt like the main event, again, was Lita and Becky Lynch, and then this was just a dark match that we happened to
see. Yes, very much so. That was the energy I got out of this. Send them home happy nonsense. Yeah. And you couldn't do that because the heels won.
Well, on the dark matches that I've seen people tweet about, yeah, they do win.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so I was like, I literally was watching this going, I've seen people tweeting recently and sending us even messages about watching a WWE live event where it was Rollins and Owens versus these two, and a big, I don't know, RKO sent everyone to send the fans home happy. And I was like, cool, I can see where this is going. They've just become number one contenders. Let's really make it up. Like, oh, bloody hell. No, lost, stomped. See you later. There's a, you know, something there about, you know, Owens being left behind by Rollins and walking out, but I'm scratching around on the floor for find something to find from this. So let us know your thoughts on Monday Night Raw on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Well, actually, you can follow all three of us. You can follow Michael Hamflett at
Michael Hamflett.
You can follow Michael Sidgwick at
M Sidgwick.
You can follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE. And make sure you subscribe to WhatCulture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts, where you can also leave us a 5-star review, just like Nick Degg did. Short, crap, wrestling related. You know what to do. And we'll be back later on today, of course, with our NXT 2.0 preview. If you've never listened before, even if you don't watch NXT, we barely talk about the show. It's got a lot of fun games to play. Give it a chance, because it is, it's one of the highlights of the week, let's be perfectly honest. Right.
It's like that.
Yeah. Right, my thanks to the Dudley Boys. This has been a Raw Review. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special moms in your life. And what better way than with Osea's limited edition skincare sets featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has 2 limited edition sets, perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their Golden Glow body set includes 3 clinically proven bestsellers for silky, smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go Facial set has everything she needs to achieve spa-level results at home. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. For a limited time, you can save up to $48 on Osea sets, plus get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. Pamper the moms in your life and get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code MOM.